Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us for MitoAction's podcast, Energy in Action. I'm Kyra Mann, CEO of MitoAction, and I'm your host. Here on Energy in Action, we talk all things Mito, and I'm glad you're here to learn and be part of our community. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Energy in Action. We are thrilled to have with us today a Mito warrior, Devin Gottfurst. Devin, welcome to Energy in Action.
Thank you so much for having me. And more importantly, thank you so much for doing this and bringing awareness to everybody.
Absolutely. Well, we are excited to share with our listeners your story and your journey with mitochondrial disease, because it's a really exciting journey and a testament to survival, right? Because regardless of the challenges that you have, you're pushing through it. And it's a great testament to you, and I hope an inspiration to others who are listening. So, Devin, let's start off. Tell us when you started having symptoms and you knew something wasn't right.
For me, it started with my eyes. I just had extreme dry eyes. I would wake up in the middle of the night and have to put drops in my eyes, or I remember being on a date and my eyes would be so dry that I would like run to the restroom like after every course of meal or after a drink. And he kept saying, do you have stomach ache? Is something wrong? And I was having light sensitivity. I was just having eye issues. It was really weird. And to be honest with you, I was getting a little bit older. I was reaching 40 and I thought maybe it was Botox, you know, like maybe because it was so difficult, you know, to drive. Right. I couldn't understand what was going on. And so I went to my eye doctor. And at first they couldn't figure out what it was. They weren't sure why my eyes were reacting to the sunlight, why it was reacting to everything, you know, why I had extreme dry eyes. You know, they tried similar things like Restasis came out a little bit later, but they would try different things on my eyes. And I started getting infections in my eyes. So then they put in bandage contacts and they were trying all these different things. And I was someone that never went to the eye doctor. Maybe once every 3 years, I was not in glasses. From 1 to 40, I never broke anything but a nail. So all of a sudden, they're trying to figure out what is going on with my eyes. And I just remember one day, I just couldn't see. Like it was just, my eyes were so swollen and so red. And I remember sitting at my Beverly Hills doctor's, because yes, I had a career and I live in Los Angeles and I have good doctors. And they said, the two doctors came in and they said, we can't help you anymore. And I'm like, but I can't see right now. It's really blurry. My eyes hurt. And they said, we're going to send you to a cornea specialist. And I, you know, I'm like, now it's like 5:30. So my assistant drove me over there and she waited for me. And she said, you know, she took out the contact lenses and she said that, you know, thank God you came to me. Had you kept the lenses in or had you continued on that protocol, you could have lost your sight.
Wow.
You know, it was very difficult. And then they sent me to the Jules Stein Institute for Eyes. It's a big eye clinic at UCLA. And I don't know if I should use a doctor's name, but I'll never forget the day I got diagnosed. They do a biopsy. And I remember it like it's yesterday. There was like four offices or four like, you know, rooms where you sit when you're waiting for your results, right? And then the middle couch, and the doctor would go from room to room. And the head at the time, and she goes, you have a mitochondrial disease called chronic progressive external ophthalmoplegia, CPEO, and there's no cure. And she walked out.
Oh my goodness. So what do you do with that?
Yeah, I never saw her again. And that was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and so your symptoms, was it progressive?
Yeah, well, that's the name of it. Chronic progressive external ophthalmoplegia. So it's chronic, which means it's there always. It's progressive, which means it's progressive. It's on the external part of your body. And it was affecting my eyes. So I went to probably 16 doctors. I went to USC, Keck Hospital. I went to UCLA. I went to Cedars. I finally got with the most amazing doctor that I've ever met in my life, Dr. Nicole Fram. She's a cornea specialist. I call her Dr. Hope because I don't want to start crying. She was the first person that said, I can help you.
Yeah.
I can't cure you, but I can help you and I'll go through this journey with you.
Well, and that's what you were looking for. You were looking for somebody to say, we'll get through this. We may not have all the answers, but we're going to find them together.
Yes. And I call her Dr. Hope. I told her if I ever get a service dog, which I have now, come here, Hope. I have a service dog named Hope. I named her Hope, so you never give up hope in life. And I call Dr. Nicole Fram. You can use her name. I call her Dr. Hope.
I love that.
Because she was the first one to give me hope. And she took out the lenses and she said, we got to take everything out. And I said, are you going to patch my eye? Because one doctor patched my eye and that makes it worse. It's, you know, one eye's patched and you can't see out of the other eye. You know what I mean? It's blurry. You know, she said, let's just let your eyes breathe. And then she put in bandage contacts. She changed them every day. She came in on weekends. She came in on holidays. She came in during my wedding. She came to my wedding. It's all about, I want to make it clear that you're going to hit a lot of roadblocks, because when I was seeing doctors, they were actually looking up my disease when I told them the name in journals.
Right.
Looking in the book or going on the computer and putting in CPEO.
Yeah, that's a story we hear very often. Or we'll hear that, you know, it was one blurb or a paragraph in a medical school textbook.
Yeah.
And that's all I really know. That's a story we hear very often.
You know, it's very difficult because when you're not used to going to doctors all the time and you're going to doctors every single day, I learned from my osteoplastic surgeon, you get something called white coat syndrome too. So you have to be careful, but don't give up on the first, if you don't like the first doctor, it's okay. Keep going until you find a team of doctors that you like. And I'm very, very lucky, but it takes a long time to find doctors that care and doctors that trust, that you can trust.
Right.
And that want to take you on. And Dr. Fram said that she would help me, and she did. And it wasn't easy. We had to get my eyes strong again. And what happened is I developed ptosis. If people that don't know what that is, it's like where the top lid starts to close.
Right. They call it droopy eyelid.
Droopy eyelids, yes. And so what happens is my disease is muscular, meaning that the muscles will just all of a sudden give out. And I'm just running around focusing with my eyes, which is difficult. So I'm still working because I can have someone drive for me. I can put on glasses. I can kind of hide that. But I wasn't prepared for what came later, that it can spread. It can affect any part of the muscles in your body. I broke one foot, then I broke the other foot. So I was in boots for a year. You know, they don't tell you, there's no book for this. And it affects your hearing. It can attack your legs. It can attack any muscular part of your body. The closest that I've been told is it's similar to muscular dystrophy.
Right. So for you, this has progressed pretty significantly. So in addition to your eyes, you've had all of these other, you know, your arms, your legs, your all these different parts of your body, your hearing.
Yeah, my arm, my eyes were the main focal point from, I got diagnosed, I would say in 2011. And I remember telling my boyfriend at the time that this is going to be a long road. And I think that you should go, you know, date somebody else. And I don't want you to take it on because I don't even want to take it on. And I left. And he called my best friend and he said, tell Deb and I will marry her even if she has a glass eye.
I love that. Well, and you know, that's such a topic. It's a topic we don't talk about often, is the impact on relationships with your significant other. And, you know, when one person is affected by mito, everyone in their life is affected by mito. And what a blessing that Dan stayed and he supported you and he's been by your side.
Yes, I'm very lucky that I have that. It wasn't the case with a lot of people.
For somebody who's not affected, that's hard to comprehend, right? We had another patient that shared with us driving to work and being in the car and the stimulation from everything going by as she drove down the street. By the time she got to work, she was physically exhausted because of that overstimulation. And if you're not affected like that, that's a hard thing to comprehend. And so for her, her solution was she had to have someone drive her to work and she would lay down in the passenger seat with her eyes closed because it just was physically draining for her because of the visual stimulation.
Well, it's very hard. And they scared me out of not driving to begin with. They limited my driving to half hour to and from work, but my job was driving. I was in real estate and I did commercial real estate and I did a lot of malls and remodels and things like that. And it was physical and I had to drive and go to places. And for a little while, I was able to have an assistant drive me around. But when you're limited on driving and your job is to drive,
That's difficult.
Places with your work. I went on disability, but again, and this is really important. If one person hears this and they're in their 20s or 30s or 40s, and they have this opportunity, and I'll never forget it. My company, probably 6 months before I was, I don't know how people know this, but 6 months before this happened to me, when you work for a company and you're a W-2'd and you have insurance with them, you get 1 year of disability. And they had an insurance broker and they called everyone in the conference room and they sat us down and I was probably, I don't know, 37, 38. And they're like, you know, for $500 a month, you can buy a permanent disability packet. Now, nothing, again, I'd never broken any bone in my body. I never had chicken pox. I never had the measles. I never had the mumps. I'd never been sick a day in my life except for a cold or the flu.
Right.
And had I bought that policy 6 months prior, I would be getting to this day $5,000 a month in compensation.
Yeah.
I would have had permanent disability. We don't think that something's going to happen in life.
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
I preach this, and it's probably ad nauseum to most people. You never think, you think you're invincible. And if you just one takeaway, buy permanent disability. I know it's a pair of shoes. I know it's a bottle of wine. It's a trip for the weekend. It's a dress. It's a, you know, it's extensions in your hair or color, whatever it is. It really would have made a difference in my life. Because 1 year is not enough time because I'm permanent disability doesn't pay a lot when you're used to making six figures. Because if you're a CEO of a company making $10 million or you're making $100,000, you're still only going to, the most you can make for 1 year is around, I don't even remember what it was back then. It was like $3,500 a month. That's a big difference when you have a condo and a car payment. You can't get rid of everything really quick.
Right. Or if, you know, you're supporting a family and you have kids and, you know, it's hard to take that kind of financial hit, but it's also at the same time, it's hard to think about what could happen. Right. But that's the importance of having insurance and being prepared. And, you know, it's hard to think about, but it's really important for everyone to have those assurances so that in the event anything happens, that you and your family are taken care of. It's really important. So you get your diagnosis and things start to change drastically for you. You're doing your job became difficult. What happens, you know, now you're months into this, years into this. What happens next?
For me, there were probably 5 years where it was only my eyes. And maybe it's good that I didn't know it could spread further. Maybe it was good that I didn't know that it could progress so, you know, at times so quickly. So for me, we got kind of to a place, the goal for me, I had to have a goal in my life. And the goal in my life was, could I get, what could I do? Not what couldn't I do? What could I do at this time in my life? And interestingly enough, my boyfriend or fiance at the time was having a lot of back issues. I said, you know, we can't fix me right now, but maybe we can fix you. So I Googled best back doctor in Beverly Hills, and there was a 6 month waiting period. I called, I begged him. I said, I told him my story and I told him his story. And the following week he got in, and 2 weeks later he had back surgery and his whole life changed because he couldn't walk. I mean, literally he collapsed and he would like not even be able to, he would sit in the elevator going down in our building. He would sit at the curb waiting for his car. They would ask him if he was okay because he had back problems. So, and I didn't cure him, but I found him the doctor. I said, I can't cure me, but I can cure you.
You know? Right. Connect people, you're a connector.
Yeah. And so it's important, but it's important. And so there were different things I tried. I got a lot of phone calls. Because my clients still liked me. What can you do in real estate? My family's like, hey, do you want to sell our house? You know, do you want to? So I did do a little bit of real estate. I did work for somebody. My best friend was dating somebody who had a small real estate company. And he didn't care that I wore sunglasses or that my eyes looked droopy. He knew that I was smart and I could walk. And because people can be really cruel. Like at my old job, they were very mean to me. Like they didn't get it. You know, they're like, are you blind? And I don't like when people ask me that because I'm not blind. I mean, nothing against people that are blind, but I just have eye issues. But I would wear glasses. And I said I had light sensitivity. I never went into the whole detail because I never wanted the house I was showing or the building I was showing to be about me. But people would say to me, oh, we just thought you were drunk and stoned the whole time.
Oh my goodness.
You know, I mean, your looks change. If you can't keep your eyes open and they're droopy and they're red, people think you're working drunk and stoned.
That's awful.
So that was a whole new thing I wasn't used to. So there's a little group of people in the real estate area in Beverly Hills that thought I was just drunk and stoned all the time.
That's awful. That's absolutely awful. Despite your capabilities, despite your talents, despite your education, they didn't see any of that. All they focused on was the physical.
Right. The people, obviously, that were my clients knew me and knew what was going on, but I tried not to make a big deal about it. So you have to find the balance. And I always wanted to make being disabled not a bad word.
Right.
You can have a good day. They're not all bad days. You can wake up and you can feel like you can run a marathon. You can't, but you can have days where you feel okay. You almost feel like your old self. You still can't maybe get off the toilet or get off the ground by yourself, or you still have to go to physical therapy, but you can have some good days, and then people don't believe you. It's really weird. Like, who would want to go around pretending to have a disease?
Exactly. Well, and that, you know, that's another challenge that a lot of people who are impacted by mitochondrial disease face is a lot of times the symptoms that you're facing are invisible, right? You're dealing with these internal struggles, but to the naked eye, you look like you're fine. And so it's hard for people, again, for people who aren't impacted, to wrap their arms around the concept that, you know, today you're fine and tomorrow you're not. But understanding those energy crashes and how just something so simple that a person not impacted takes for granted, the amount of energy it takes for those who are affected by mitochondrial disease just to do basic day-to-day things. Let me ask you this question. Have you determined if anybody else in your family is impacted by mitochondrial disease?
Well, my brother has rheumatoid arthritis, mm-hmm. But we have different moms, same father. My biological mother left when I was a baby, and we don't have contact, so I do not know. So I don't have a lot of information because I don't have my biological mom to go get the information from.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is like, to study it is expensive.
Right.
The serum tears are expensive. I pick and choose what I don't choose to study where it came from. I choose to study where I'm going and what I do to make it better.
Absolutely. Tell us about your wedding, because your wedding was centered around mitochondrial disease and awareness and building awareness.
At first, when I was thinking of getting married, we were going to maybe do a beach wedding so I could wear glasses. But the goal was to get my eyes, my cornea strong enough so I could have surgery. So I was lucky that I was able to have, we waited. I was able to have surgery.
So in 2016...
2016, yes. My eyes were open. I was using bandage contacts, which you put them in and it kind of protects like the sun mm-hmm. from them. And my eyes were open, which was really cool. And I decided I didn't have to have a beach wedding. So we got married at the Hilton, and we just randomly picked. It was so weird. We randomly picked September 16th, 2018. And I was getting married during mitochondrial week. So my husband, or my fiance at the time, is a very big sports person, and we were watching something, and Kevin Rosenthal, some people will know who he is. He's a...
Ken Rosenthal. Yep, Ken Rosenthal.
Ken Rosenthal, sorry.
Yeah.
I go, oh my God, he's wearing a mito bow tie. He's wearing a mito bow tie. I wrote him.
I love that.
I wrote him, and I said, I wrote him on Facebook, and I said, hi, my name is Devin. I'm getting married. I have mitochondrial disease. You're wearing the bow tie. I love that you wear bow ties. Where can I get that? Tell me. And, you know, and he wrote me back. He's like, hey, bro, which was funny. He's like, hey, bro, when they hired me, they told me I had to wear bow ties. I hate bow ties.
That's so funny.
He said, the only reason I'll wear a bow tie is if I wear a bow tie for a cause. So if you notice, he always wears a bow tie for a cause.
He does. Yes. And MitoAction was fortunate. Twice now he has worn our custom designed bow ties.
So anyway, so I ordered the bow ties and I said that the men will wear those. And then I had the bridesmaids wear green dresses, and I printed out something about mitochondrial disease because I wanted people to understand what it was. You know, people give up and say speeches, and I had my nephew read it. I changed it a little bit because, you know, unfortunately, if you are a child and you're born with it. Your life expectancy is 10 years. The reason I could live a long life is because my organs are developed. When you're a child and you're born with it, your organs aren't developed and they're not strong enough to fight it.
Right. This is with your particular diagnosis.
My particular diagnosis. So I felt like for that day, for those 200 people or 150 people that were there, my young nephew at the time, I think he was like 15, read it. And I think everybody understood at that moment the meaning of the bow tie, the meaning of the green, the meaning of what I had. And keep in mind at that time, it was only in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And my doctor was there, Dr. Hope.
I love that.
Dr. Nicole Graham. And I had her stand up and I thanked her because, like I said, she was the first doctor to give me hope when there was none. So for anybody out there that doesn't have hope, you just have to keep going until you find one. My wedding was one of the best days of my life. I felt great that day. You know, my eyes, I just had surgery from Dr. Masary. They had healed. I looked good. I felt good. And I got to have, you know, the wedding of my dreams.
You were a beautiful bride.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. So you get married in 2016?
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
So now let's fast forward, not quite 6 years. What's life been like since the wedding?
You still have to mourn the loss. It's interesting because my husband and people, you know, and I know this is going to sound like a crazy question, and they'll say, would you rather be your successful career person traveling the world, doing hotels and remodeling and doing all this, your real estate and being so successful? But I was single and I had a lot of different boyfriends, but I was always gone. So I really couldn't cultivate the best of a relationship if you're traveling. And I guess I was kind of selfish. I was just building a little mini empire. Or when this happened, it forced me to slow down. And so I don't know if I don't think I'd be married to my husband if I didn't have this disease. And I know that sounds weird, but it forced me to slow down because I worked so much and traveled so much. I wouldn't have had time to even develop my relationship with him.
Right. Well, and like you said, I think that's been one of the few positive things that have come out of COVID, that it did force us all to just stop and pause for a minute. We didn't have a choice. And, you know, spending time at home with our families and having, you know, we played so many board games. We watched so many movies. We did so much. And my family's really, really close. We spent a lot of time together anyway, but it was a different quality of time where everybody was present. Everybody wasn't on their phones all the time. Someone wasn't running out of the door to the next event or, like you said, getting on a plane, going somewhere. It forced us to be present. And I think it really taught us to reevaluate what really is important.
Well, right before COVID for me, I started noticing problems with my legs.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt it was really weird. I was in the bathtub, and this was right before COVID. So this would be 2019. And I said, Dan, I can't get up. And he goes, what do you mean you can't get up? I go, I can't get out of the bath. He goes, what do you mean you can't get out of the bath? Did you fall? No, I can't, Mike. I can't get out of the bathtub.
You didn't have the strength.
It was so humiliating. And it happened. It felt like almost overnight. It was really weird, you know, because the day before I took a bath and I was fine. So I had to get over on my knees and he had to help me get out of the bathtub.
The turning points, right? Those are the turning points.
The turning points. And I'll never forget that. So I did go to Attune Health and they did nerve reflection or nerve testing on me. And they found weakness in my legs and in my arms. And they said, my disease has spread. Now, Dr. Hope, who I love, Dr. Fram and Dr. Masary, they specialize on the eyes. So I wasn't prepared. I don't know if anyone's ever prepared.
Right.
But I wasn't prepared for it to spread to other parts of my body. And they said that it was imperative that I go to, or, you know, not an option. I had to go to physical therapy. And they didn't know would I ever gain back all my strength. But in order to not lose any more, I needed to go to physical therapy. And then, you know, unfortunately, COVID hit.
So you couldn't go to therapy.
You couldn't go to therapy because they, you know, so I made up my own therapy and I would always injure myself. For some reason, I'd injure my rib or something. But like I said, I walk the halls. I do the stairs with my service dog. I mean, it's really, really important. And if you're not feeling good, have someone walk with you. If you fall down, you get back up. I do have a walker and a cane. I've tried to use the cane, but for some reason, I don't know. I'm not quite there yet. I hope I don't get there, but they are there in case I do need to use them. But COVID kind of hid some of my issues because I work from home now. I work for my husband's law firm. And like I said, I talk on the phone, I print, I scan, I handle all the paperwork, nothing to do with billing. The funniest thing is some of the clients we become friendly with, and they'll be like, oh, did you see, you know, he's a divorce attorney. Did you read this and that? Can you believe what he said? I said, if they don't pay me to read, so I don't have to read the paperwork. I just have to make sure there's 20 pages printed, 122 pages printed.
Right.
You know, the hardest thing now for me is getting off the toilet seat. I can't go from, you know, from the floor to the ground. But I found this great place. Again, you have to research yourself. You have to be your advocate. And I found an insurance advocate. And I found that I'm an advocate for me.
Absolutely. You are your best advocate.
You are your best advocate. And I went online and I found this company called Luna. And it's not only in the United States. I mean, not only in, I don't think it's only in California. I think it started in Oakland, and they bring home care to you.
Okay.
So, and they take your insurance. And so I started working with this guy and he would push me and it was really good. But then COVID hit strong. So we couldn't do that. So I tried to mimic everything and then I would hurt myself. But I'm like, you know what? I got to do it. So right before we talked, I walked up and down the halls. I did the stairs, but it's tough. You just have to force yourself to move. That's the most important thing.
And move within your limits, right? Because a successful exercise session or physical therapy session for me may be completely different than a successful exercise session for you.
Oh, of course. And you also have to tell when you do go to physical therapy, this is really important, is, and the reason they stopped me from going there is people are sick or they're getting out of surgery or they're having, you know, and so they're going to physical therapy to rehab. You're not rehabbing from a surgery. You're rehabbing from a disease. You might not ever get any better, but you're trying to build strength. So they don't understand. It's not like you had hip replacement, so they're going to just specialize on getting your hip better, or you had back surgery, and so they're focusing on your back. This is a whole body.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We've had a lot of patients share talking about physical therapy, and you know, exactly along the lines with what you're saying is that they go to physical therapy and they start, you know, they reach a level of improvement, which is deemed to be like their plateau, right? They plateau in what they're able to accomplish in physical therapy. And so they say, okay, great. You've hit this, you know, you've hit the goal. You're done. You don't have to come back anymore. But when you're dealing with mitochondrial disease and right, like you said, you're rehabbing for the symptoms of a diagnosis, not an injury. If you don't continue to maintain that level of physical interaction, then you start to decline. So even though you've reached that peak, the consistency is still really important. And that's been a fight for a lot of our families with insurance and getting discharged from physical therapy.
For me, I can't just be a mito warrior and I can't just be my husband's wife printing out papers. I always have to find something that I can do. And I can't just do physical therapy. So I stopped in 2020, but for the past like 6 years, 7 years, we do a toy drive for Children's Hospital where I challenge everybody to, it doesn't have to be for Children's Hospital, but I challenge everybody to donate a toy to, you know, one child or person they don't know that's sick or that may not be getting a gift. And then it kind of turned into going to Children's Hospital because, you know, they give out like something like 88,000 gifts. Like if in Children's Hospital, if you're having surgery as a child there, they give you a gift. If your sibling's there, they give the sibling a gift. So we got into a program with them and we brought gifts for the past. We couldn't do it last year or the year before because of COVID. You have to find something outside of the disease.
Absolutely.
It can't only be the disease.
Right. You have to find something, you know, a passion project or something.
Yeah.
Something that gives you, you know, that's fulfilling, right? And gives you purpose and adds more meaning to your life beyond the disease.
Yes. You don't let the disease define you. You define it.
Well, it's really important for everyone to be able to find something that gives them joy.
Yes.
Right? Whether it's, you know, taking 20 minutes to yourself today to sit and read, or, but just what is it that gives you joy, and being purposeful in trying to make time to bring those parts to your life every single day somehow.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's okay to have bad days too.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I've just always been known for being positive, but you can be sad too, because you have to mourn the loss. Now, it's different because, you know, I always felt like no one got it. No one understood. Yes, at my wedding, I felt like everybody understood, because it was all about me. Like, on your wedding, it's supposed to be about you. But in most situations, it's not all about me.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? But when COVID hit and people were like, can you believe just one day I lost my job? I said, yeah, I can.
Right, because that's been your reality.
You know, but you got to figure something out. You'll get through it. You know, it's like, we're here and stuff like that. But I didn't wish it on my worst enemy.
No, not at all. But it was probably for the first time that people who aren't impacted by mitochondrial disease got a glimpse of what life is like for somebody with mitochondrial disease, right? The loss, the challenges, having to isolate yourself and not being around people who could potentially infect you, and having to make hard choices about who you can spend time with and events, you know, that are really important to you that maybe you now can't go to because you're worried about getting sick, or it's just, you know, it's too much. You're drained for the day and you just can't do anymore. And I think, you know, people who aren't impacted by a rare disease got a glimpse of what that's like. When you're immune compromised, you can't take those risks. And you would only hope that the people in your life would respect that and would make decisions so that you don't have to make those hard choices. And it's tough.
You'll learn who's there for you.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, we have cancer in my family and there's people way worse off than me. And I find that you also can't verbally like throw up your disease on them.
Right.
Meaning like I explained to a cousin the other day what I had. I've had it how many years?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he was ready to listen then. You have to realize people aren't, but he's had loss with cancer and he's had people that are sick. There's always people that are worse off than you.
Sure.
So sometimes you just, like, I went to a funeral, a few of them. And, you know, one of the younger kids said, nice kicks. And I'm like, it's because I had tennis shoes on. You know, well, I can't wear anything but tennis shoes. So with black pants, I wear tennis shoes.
Right. It wasn't a fad or a stylish thing. Yeah.
You know, I sit in the back if I have to leave early. You know what I mean? Like, those are just the things that I do.
Right.
But I don't, you know, my advice to people is don't give up on love. Don't give up on, this isn't the end for me. There are days where you feel like you're not really you're not dead, but you're not living. And then there are other days where you're going to wake up and you can feel like you can accomplish anything. And the goal is to try to have more of those days. And I do find just walking, and I can only speak for me, but as long as I get my legs moving, whether you're moving in the hallway, whether you're moving outside, whether I got these little wheels, it's like kind of like a half bike where you just roll. I don't know. I saw, and you know, it's just like, you know, you can be doing paperwork and it's just the wheels for your legs.
Right, right. Like a pedal bike, just a pedal bike.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. But it's really, really important. And Luna, if you can check out Luna also, if they have one in your area, they teach you things like how to do squats on your bed, how to get in and out of bed, because you realize that. I remember, like, it's hard. We have a high bed, so it's hard for me to get my legs up. Now I can get my legs up. I know it's little things.
Right. You learn to adjust and adapt as best you can.
I think it is important that you do get into a group. You don't have to be the president and of the group, you know, and you don't, and look at, I got to meet you and you don't even have mitochondrial disease. And here you are trying to help us.
Yeah. Well, it's just important to know that when things do get tough, that there are people who get it, who understand your challenges. And then it's also good when you have successes to have people who get it and understand how huge those successes are for you, right? Because everyone may not see that as a success, but something as simple as, right, like being able to lift your legs up on the bed by yourself and getting out of the tub by yourself. Like, that's huge.
I know it sounds kind of stupid, but it's like lifting my legs up without having to use my arm to pull my leg up.
Right. Right.
You know, like little things like that. My goal is to be able to get off the toilet seat without having to hold on to a bar or something.
Absolutely.
I'm not there yet. I may not get there. I'm also a wife. And so there's, you know, I mean, I don't know if people ever talk about it, but romance, you still have to do it. So you still, even if it hurts emotionally, mentally, physically, you still have to, you know, you still want love. You still want success. You still want fun. You dance. Sometimes I dance. And when I hear an old song, I mean, I love music.
I love that.
I love acupuncture. You know, I love my family, my service dog, Hope. Hope, come say hi. <That's> I have a golden doodle.
You find your way through it.
People will tell you it's because you're getting older. And this is your answer. I have all the things that you have going on getting older, menopause, bathroom, whatever it is. I have all those and mitochondrial disease.
Right. Double whammy.
Yes.
Exactly. Well, and it's important, as you did, to recognize when you have these things going on as an adult and you think, right, it is, I'm just getting older, things are changing. But to know your body and to understand and to question it and to go and get, you know, seek medical treatment to say, okay, this is just not right. And I just know it's not right. It doesn't feel right. Instead of excusing it away, right?
It's very important because, like, my eyes were infected with these contacts that the other doctor gave me. And Dr. Hope said, if I would have waited, because she, I remember it was the end of the day. And she said, if I wouldn't have gotten these out of your eyes, I don't know if I could have cured your cornea. So your body will tell you.
Trust your intuition. That is for sure.
Exactly. And don't give up. And there are people out there that care. And there are people out there that don't care at all. But there's, like, there's good police, there's bad police.
Right. Well, Devin, I am so glad we got this chance to chat and for you to share your story. And I hope for those that are listening that you've provided some inspiration, right? Because you've been through it. You've lost a lot.
You lose a lot. And you have to mourn that loss. But you gain strength. You don't realize how strong you are till you, and again, you have to go through it. You don't get over it. You have to go through it.
Right. One of our board members shared a story with us about her daughter. And she said, you know, we were spending so much time just saying, like, how do we get to the light at the end of the tunnel? We were so focused on the light at the end of the tunnel. Now we're just focused on getting through the tunnel and being present and living in the moment and just taking 1 minute at a time. We're not worried about the light. It'll still be there. And we can't be so focused on that to not be present.
Right. You can't focus. You don't want the disease to define you. You define the disease.
And you've been able to live an incredibly rich life, regardless of your diagnosis and the challenges that you face. And we look forward to hearing what's next and what's to come, because we know there's a lot more coming from you. And we're going to be excited to share that and
to be continued.
Yeah, I love it. And when you have that great victory of getting off the toilet, I want to know about it. I will celebrate with you.
I hope I can. I mean, can you imagine? That's like the worst one of them all. It's kind of embarrassing, but you know what? If we don't talk about it, then people feel alone, you know?
Absolutely.
But don't give up. I mean, we're not dying, and that's the whole point.
Right.
We're here.
Exactly.
And we can still do great things, and we can still get our hair done, and it's still important to do your nails, and it's still important to, you know, try to look your best. Cause I think if you look good on the outside, you'll feel better on the inside. And things like that.
Absolutely.
And get disability insurance.
Yes. Get disability insurance so that you're prepared. And maybe we'll chat more, Devin, about your insurance advocate. And maybe we'll see if we can get that person for a conversation to share more.
Sounds good.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time today, Devin.
Thank you. And God bless you and everybody out there. And keep going, Mita Warrior. Stay strong.
That's right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Energy in Action. Remember to give us a 5-star rating on your listening app. This helps to boost us up the charts and makes it easier for others to find us. You can find all of the links and details that we share today in the show notes or at mitoaction.org. Have a great day, and we look forward to having you join us next time.